Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us this week on the Command Post. In the studio today, I am joined by a brand new acquaintance of mine who I imagine will soon become a friend. His name is Rich Milliman, and I'm going to let him introduce himself to you in just a moment. So most of you guys know that this is the kind of show where we get all kinds of really cool, interesting people who get to come on. And it's basically a chat between two folks, and everyone else just gets to eavesdrop on it. So I wanted to make this one an absolute chat from scratch. I have literally never spoken to our guest today until he popped on a couple of minutes ago. He's never talked to me either. And so I think this should be kind of a raw, interesting, and really fun chat. So Rich, thank you so much for coming on to the Heroes or to the Command Post.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Just give us a little bit of background. Who are you? How did you stumble into this conversation?
Sure. As you said, my name is Rich Milliman. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Extra Duty Solutions. And a lot of people ask me, well, how'd you get into the world of extra duty? Because I'm not former law enforcement, so it's an odd world to get into. So I used to be the head of risk at the world's largest hedge fund, actually, and I have a partner in this business who was the head of physical security. So part of our role was to ensure that certain people stay alive and are safe and so on. And we used to occasionally use extra duty officers in that endeavor, and realized in so doing that that world is kind of a bit of a messy world, you know, both on the corporate side, the buyers, if you will, of extra duty officers, and for the law enforcement agencies themselves. So we decided to form a company that would help law enforcement agencies in the administration of the extra duty programs, and also reduce the risk, the financial risk, the legal risk, and so on. And so that's the background, and we've grown rapidly and doubled in size every year for the last few years in that company.
So where are you located?
So we have actually four operations centers. Our headquarters and main operations center is in Shelton, Connecticut. Shelton, Connecticut is about an hour northeast of New York City. And we have a second operations center in Wall, New Jersey. That's about an hour south of New York. And then we have one in Tampa, Florida, and one in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay. So for those of us who are not from the law enforcement community, because I'm not either, I was never a police officer. I get yelled at all the time by the officers I work with now. They say, yes, you are. You're in law enforcement. You train, you develop. Like, that's what you do. So you're one of us. And I appreciate that, but I still don't feel kind of like I'm in that world. So, right. And mainly because, you know, I don't share the terminology and I don't have the background. And so sometimes when I'm talking to someone who works in a particular area or a specialty area of law enforcement, I need them to explain it to me. And I know some of our listeners are like me and kind of just stumbled upon this show and have really just enjoyed understanding law enforcement a little better. So for them and for me, unfamiliar with this extra duty concept, can you break it down for us and explain what that means?
Yeah, extra duty is sometimes called off duty or secondary employment or side jobs, depending on where you are in the country. But essentially what it is it's when a sworn officer is working for a private entity, is being paid by a private entity. And there could be a lot of reasons for that, or, you know, in different parts of the country, it tends to be different types of jobs that officers would take. But it breaks down into basically two. There's security jobs and what's normally called road jobs or traffic control. So a security job is, you know, if you go to a movie theater on a Saturday night and you see an officer and a cruiser out front, or an officer in the lobby, or you go to a jewelry store and you see an officer up front, typically they're working what's called an extra duty detail, or just a detail. And they're not on duty at that point in time, even though they were probably wearing their uniform and displaying their badge and firearm. So they're ready to go on duty if need be. But they're actually being paid at that moment in time by the movie theater or the jewelry store or whatever it is, to provide specific security for their needs. And then road jobs, especially if you live in the Northeast, you're probably very familiar with this. If you're driving down the highway and a utility company, for example, is installing cables, and they have it down to one lane, and you see two cruisers with lights on with officers there. Once again, they're probably being paid by that utility company, and that is a road job or traffic control. So extra duty is essentially when officers are working for private concerns being paid by them, but are ready to go into on duty at any time.
So I think a lot of people would be, like, non-law enforcement people would probably be surprised with the number of police officers who have a second and sometimes even a third job. How many people do you have working for you?
Well, so we work for the municipality. So if a police department or a sheriff's office wants to hire us, we work for them, for the municipality. So we don't work directly for, you know, the Walmarts and Verizons of the world. But having said that, you know, we have literally thousands of officers that are working these types of details in any given week. And most departments, most police and sheriff's departments around the country have some semblance of a extra duty program. It may be very structured, or it may be very kind of unstructured, where, you know, some of them are so unstructured that if I own a movie theater and you're a police officer, I can just come up to you and say, hey, why don't you come over Saturday night and I'll pay you X dollars an hour and you can provide security. The more structured ones are, you call us, for example, and we would put the detail out to the officers and they can work it or not work it. These are voluntary programs that officers can or cannot work. But yeah, to your point, if you're a law-abiding citizen, most of the time you see a law enforcement officer, they're probably working some form of detail, because unless you're being let off in handcuffs, you probably don't have a lot of interaction, you know, with officers when they're on duty, right?
Well, yeah, let's hope, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't want them hunting me down. Thank you very much. Yeah. So, all right. So you work for the municipalities and you handle sort of the organizational concept of who is available when and how many you need and what kind of customers you have in the region that you're serving. Yeah?
It's essentially, you think of it as we're a managed service. So we take on the administrative burden and the risk of the program. So if you... let's continue with our movie theater example. If you own a movie theater and you want an officer to come on Saturday night because you have a premiere that might attract a particular type of crowd that you're nervous about, and you might call your local police department or sheriff's office to see if they have an extra duty program. Now, if we have a contract with that police department or sheriff's office, we're administering the program. Even though it's a local phone number, you're actually calling us at one of our four operation centers, and we're taking down all the information. You know, we're explaining to you what the rates are and so on, and then we put that that detail, your movie theater detail, out into a system where all the officers can see it, and they can get texts and they can get emails and so on, and then officers can sign up for it or they can request it. And there might be some type of a fairness algorithm to divvy up these jobs, so not three people are getting all the jobs. And then they go work it, and they tell us when they worked, you know, because it may go short, it may go long, and we pay them, and then we invoice you, and you pay us, and that's essentially how it works. So, while what I just explained is pretty straightforward, if you have a police department that's doing $5 or $10 million a year of extra duty work, that's an incredible amount of work. I mean, you know, we would have a few people dedicated to just answering your phones. We have a finance person doing nothing but sending out invoices and doing payrolls for officers. So, you know, in some departments, you're basically running a security firm within a police department or a sheriff's office. So we do all that administrative work for them so they don't have to.
So when you're presenting this kind of a concept, this business concept to a municipality, maybe like a city's council or something, you're chatting with them about what this is, what do you explain to them is the benefit to the community, to having your program actively, right, you know, working in the area?
So one benefit, I mean, there's a multitude of benefits, but one is it frees up administrative burden, right? So I'll give you an on-the-ground example. On Monday, I was in a department in the Boston area. They have, I think, about 140 sworn officers in this department. Two of them do nothing but administer the extra duty program. They take calls from vendors, They make sure the officers are going to the details. They send out invoices. They make collection calls. So that's two officers that are not working on public safety that taxpayers are paying for. So we free them up to do what taxpayers want them to do and focus on public safety, right? So that's one benefit. Another benefit is a lot of times in these programs, there is allegations of unfairness, or one officer feels shafted because some other officer got a job that he thought he should get. It's his turn to get it. So we set up an algorithm that's systematized that divvies up jobs in the way that the department wants us to do it, so that there's no more arguments, there's no more disagreements, everything's black and white. So it kind of frees up that type of work too, or that type of, you know, that eliminates those types of arguments. Another big benefit, especially for the city side, is it takes away all the financial risk. So right now, if a utility hires four officers for some type of traffic control, that utility may not pay the invoice for 3 months. Well, the municipality is floating that money for 3 months. In other words, we're giving them the utility a 3 month interest free loan. So that's, you know, there's a cost to money, right? So the taxpayers are paying for that. So we pick up that one too. And then what happens if the utility goes out of business, or a gardener needs, a landscaper needs an officer, and the week after the detail of the landscaper goes out of business? Well, now the municipality has to eat that. So we take on that risk too. And also what we do doesn't cost the municipality anything. So we get paid by charging a small fee to the vendor, the person hiring the officer, as opposed to the municipality. So we're freeing up officers, we're taking away all the financial risk, some of the legal risk, and it's free. So for the municipality, there's a really big benefit.
Well, a lot of the process, I guess, from me entering law enforcement and working with them has been understanding the unique nature of what they do and how they're trained to do it. So the first example that you gave about, you know, the value proposition really to the cities makes the most sense to me. When you say there are two officers who are just taking phone calls and handling administrative duties, to me, that's a pretty big red flag, because we want our officers who are trained to do very specialized things to be actually out doing those very specialized things. And to think right. that, you know, the municipality is dropping $100,000 a year maybe on salaries for people to answer phones when they could be out protecting and serving. This makes a good, you know, good amount of sense to me to have someone else take on that responsibility.
Yeah, and we always say, like, you know, let us do that low level stuff. You guys are trained to do other things that we're not trained to do. We couldn't do your job, you know. So let us do the administrative stuff, and it'll be a lot cheaper and more economical in the long run.
Yeah, I totally agree. I can get that. So let me ask you, what type of or what size of a department are you, is kind of like your perfect idea of a client?
Yeah, so our departments range from, you know, 20 to over 1,000, you know, officers. So the kind of pain and suffering of administering an extra duty program is felt, you know, from small departments to medium sized to large departments. Having said that, I will say there seems to be like this kind of kink in the curve, if you will, at about 100 officers. Like, we see a lot of departments where once they cross 100 officers, the administration of the extra duty program becomes pretty difficult, and it becomes pretty messy. So that size of a department and above, it seems like it's the service is really needed, and it sort of comes into fruition at that point. But also what we see even more so than that is a lot of times extra duty programs kind of grow organically on the side without much oversight. So there'll be a department that has a relatively few number of officers, and they might have just one extra duty client. You know, it's a church every Sunday morning, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Then there's two churches. Then there's two churches and a jewelry store. Then there's two churches, a jewelry store, and a hospital complex. Then they built a huge grocery store, and they want service too. And you fast forward 10 years, and you've got this, you know, $3 million security company within the police department that has never received a lot of management or thinking or oversight. And that's where we see a lot of need, where there's really not been a lot of thinking about, is this the best way to do this?
So what's the process? If there is a department out there that's thinking, you know what, this actually sounds like a major money saver, or Maybe a mayor is listening to this and he's thinking to himself, it would be kind of cool to get rid of some of those administrative responsibilities. What's the process? What do they do?
Yeah, first they can just reach out to us, and that's easy to do. Our website is extradutysolutions.com. And our general phone number where you get one of our operations team members is 203-202-3991. Or you can just email us at info@extradutysolutions.com. But once you reach out, one of us will call you back within 24 hours. And usually the process is, we have a general agreement month to month, so you don't tie you in for 3 years or something like that. And it's written in English. And, you go through that. We either come physically to the department or have a phone call and talk about how exactly you want your program to run. So, what jobs are off limits? What do you require the vendor or the customer to agree to in terms of terms and conditions? Or do you want to see a certificate of insurance from these guys? How do you want to divvy up the jobs? Is it just first come, first serve? Or do you want to have a rotation list or a point system or something like that? Do you want this integrating with your on-duty scheduling software and so on? So we get all that. We get the roster. We set up our infrastructure customized for that particular department. We run some test jobs, make sure everything's working well. We physically come in and do training for the officers. We usually just go to roll call for a couple days. And the system is very easy to use. If you can check your checking account balance online, you can use the system. I always say to chiefs that if you have an officer that can't use the system, you've made a horrible hiring mistake. But and then we form the customers that are using the extra duty program, and then we're off and running. And that whole thing is usually about 3 weeks, and then we're off and running and administering the program. So it's a pretty easy process.
What started you in this idea? Like, is this like an entrepreneurial venture of yours that you saw a need and you were like, I'm going to fill this? Like, what started this all for you?
Yeah, well, like I said, I was working in a hedge fund, as my partner was too, and we used to use extra duty officers, and we both left, and we kind of looked at each other and said, that whole world of extra duty is kind of this messy, nebulous, gaseous world that seems like it needs some structure. And we actually thought, this is back in 2015, we actually thought it's from more the corporate side. Like, if you're the chief security officer at Walmart and you want officers in 300 Walmarts, the way that world works is you have to call 300 police departments. So we thought, we'll start a company where you just call us and we call the 300 police departments, which is what we started doing. And as we started doing that, we realized, wow, the law enforcement agencies, they suffer too, because it's a lot of burden on these guys. And look, at least a corporation can throw money at problems. A government agency can't really do that. So they kind of, suffer in silence. So we spoke to a bunch of chiefs and a bunch of sheriffs about, tell me about your extra duty program. What we would constantly hear is, oh man, yeah, that's a necessary evil. And so we developed infrastructure and we bought a software company that developed software scheduling programs. And we started with our first law enforcement client in the January of 2016. And in 2017, we exited that whole corporate market. What we started to do, we got out of completely because we didn't want to have a conflict of interest. We didn't want to be representing both Walmart and the municipality. We had to be on one side or the other. And then we've doubled every year. So in 2019, the total amount of invoices that we sent out for extra duty details that we managed was $50 million. Wow. So there's a big demand for it. But that's how we got into it. It was kind of a realization that this is a messy little world that could be cleaned up and it could benefit law enforcement by doing so.
So what kind of feedback have you gotten from the chiefs in the department as far as what their thoughts are after they've used you guys for the first time?
Yeah, so a lot of times when we first come in to talk to a chief or the union or, the command staff, the feedback we get right after that meeting or in the meeting is kind of suspicious, a suspect. And part of this is, law enforcement's trained to not believe anything they hear because they get lied to all day by bad guys. But part of it's that, the extra duty program tends to be a lot of money involved, a lot of money flowing in that. And that, all of a sudden this company that they never heard of is coming in and saying, yeah, we'll mess around with it for you. And that can be kind of scary, right? So in the beginning, we get a lot of, like, I wouldn't say pushback, but a lot of deep questions and a lot of, we want to talk to everybody you've ever encountered and, you know, all your references and so on. After they've been working with us for a few months, it's almost universally positive. In fact, we've had some heads of unions and so on that were adamantly against us coming in, that after 3 months, they're like our best salespeople, you know? So a lot of times the feedback I get from the chief or the sheriff is, man, we should have done this a long time ago.
Well, I think that's probably one of the best bits of, I don't know, of information you can get out there, because when you're being promoted by your clients, then it is an agreed upon belief that you're doing something that's valuable. Have you heard?
You know, we're always going to say, yeah, what we do is great and valuable, but of course we're going to do that. We want business, right? So it's always, I mean, we have never, ever had a sale where there wasn't a lot of conversation between the prospect and several other departments that we work for to make sure that this will work for them. And, you know, the officers will be happy. The community will be happy, especially in sheriff's department. You know, they're elective officials and they answer to the community, and they need to make sure that the service is going to be really good. When somebody calls at 3 a.m., we're going to answer the phone. And they, you know, they're very careful about that, as they should be.
So I remember very well when I first introduced myself to the law enforcement community, it was for something called the Heroes Project, and it's focused on officer wellness. And I walked into roll call and I introduced this, and I got like that blank stare, the one that's very, very cynical and suspect. What in the world is she doing here? This is not going to happen. And I just remember meeting the first officer who he bought into what I had to say, and then he became kind of my internal ambassador for the project. Okay. And it sort of worked. So I'm just curious, what do you remember what it was like the first time when you walked into a department and had to like pitch this to the command staff?
I could write a book and like funny words about pitching this to command staff. I've had ones where I think of one in particular, a department where I came in and the chief called us in and wanted to hear about what we did. And the meeting was the chief, three union members, and a few other people. And basically for an hour, two union members held me and one hit me. You know, it was one, you know, how are you going to do this? And how are you going to do that? And you know, the chief said to me at the end, you know, about a week later, he called me and said, I'd love to do this, but I can't fight this fight right now. You know, there's too much pushback. And I knew what was going on in this department. You could tell by the reception I got that, you know, that some of these guys were getting, you know, a lot more money than they should, basically. And there was some dirty business going on. And sure enough, about a year and a half later, I get a call from a county prosecutor who says, that chief's going to call you back. And when he does, can you go back down there? And we went back down there. And, you know, now some guys were federally indicted based on abuse of the extra duty program. In fact, we have, I think, four departments right now that the reason we're in there, the reason we're administering the program, is because we followed the FBI. You know, there was, you know, federal indictments of abuse and fraud and double dipping and skimming and all sorts of other things. So, you know, it's probably another benefit that I don't talk about a lot, but the extra duty program, if it's not managed well, if it's not sort of managed as well as the department is or as much as the department is, you can, you know, it can be a bad little place where bad people hang out and do bad things. And sometimes it's caught a little bit too late. But yeah, I've had a bunch of command staff people and so on that, you know, would, some of the things that I've heard are just like one in particular. I remember this is a senior person in a police department with a chief sitting right there saying, well, wait a minute, if you pay us and then you 1099 us, or you pay the city and the city pays us, either way, we'll have to pay taxes on that money. And I was floored that, you know, that a law enforcement.
Can I just say, duh? Money,
you know, I just kind of said, well, yeah, it's, you know, it's ordinary income and the IRS rules are.
Oh my gosh. Welcome to the United States tax system, buddy. Yes, yeah, you have to pay your taxes. That's hilarious.
Yeah, but oh man, no, I try to keep my mouth shut with names and stuff like that.
I'll bet. Oh my.
Some of the stories, yeah.
That's incredible. So have any of the officers who've worked with your company, have they had anything positive to say or any feedback to give you about what it's like comparatively speaking to having worked with their own department before you?
Yeah, so a lot of times the feedback we'll get, it's either very positive or it's bifurcated, in that sometimes, you know, some departments will have what they call a coordinators, people, sworn officers that say, I'm the coordinator for the hospital. So the hospital is my client. If you want to work a detail at the hospital, you got to come see me first and I'll decide, you know, and you can imagine where that often goes. Right?
Oh yeah. So that's all about who you like, who you know, who you hang out with.
We actually call coordinators job fathers internally because a lot of them are, you know, you can either laying it out there, right?
That's so awesome.
but so a lot of times those people aren't real keen on us hanging out because they got a racket going and they want to keep that racket going. But a lot of times the younger officers or the less senior officers, the ones who are getting pushed aside and they can't get details to work because it's unfair, it's stacked against them, they absolutely love it because now it's fair and, you know, and they have an opportunity to do things that they didn't before. So it's usually pretty positive.
So I have like a built-in distrust of technology. I know I use it all the time and I have no choice but to trust it, but I just really have a distrust of it. So when you mentioned that you have an algorithm that helps make things fair, it piqued my curiosity. First of all, I guess, can you explain that? Because I'm not very technologically savvy. I mean, I can run the controls right here in my studio to function this podcast. And that's about the extent of my skill set. And that one, frankly, only extends to pressing record and stop. So tell me about this.
So we have pretty sophisticated software that has the ability to divvy up these details in a wide variety of ways. I mean, we have 75 or so different agencies right now that in 14 different states that we administer the programs for, and no two of them do it exactly the same way. So, you know, it breaks down into three general buckets of types of ways that departments tend to divvy up their jobs. One way is just first come, first serve. The first guy that says, I want that job gets it. That's easy, right? But then that tends to be not real fair, right? So, you know, that somebody who's working day shift or somebody who's working night shift and sleeping during the day is going to get kind of their not the pick of the litter. And somebody who has not much to do all day long, but see what jobs are out there, is going to get a lot. So a lot of departments want to go to what we call fairness algorithms. So the two general types of fairness algorithms are a rotation list or a point system. So a rotation list is, as the name implies, everybody goes on a list and the first guy gets, you know, the first job he wants. And then the second guy, third guy, fourth guy wants the next job, he gets that, fifth guy, sixth guy, and so on. A point system is you get like a point for every dollar you earn or hour you work working extra duty, say since the beginning of the year, and the low point guy who wants the next job gets it. So it makes it more even, right? Now, I just grossly oversimplified this because there's a myriad of different types of point systems and rotation lists. And, you know, you get up in the Northeast and you can get some very complex. We have some departments that have four or five rotation lists that integrate in different ways on different days and rotate around each other. And you can flip from one list to another. And then the emergency jobs are given out in a different way. And some of these, you almost have to be a NASA engineer to figure out how it actually works. But once it's understood how it's going to work and we program it and we put it in the infrastructure for that particular police department, that's it. That's how it works. And we never, ever get arguments or, you know, we may get a question, like we had last week, an officer called and said, hey, how come I wasn't offered the so-and-so job? It wasn't in my portal. I never saw it. I would have taken that job. And we looked into it. And the reason was that guy was not canine certified and that job required canine certification. So he wouldn't have seen the job, right? But so once everything is set up and people understand, here's how your department has decided that your jobs will be divvied up, then it's black and white. Then we really don't get any sort of questions about it. But it's all in the software, in a sense.
So this is much more than I'm answering phones for potential clients who are looking for extra duty staffing. This is more like I'm personalizing your skill set, your department's schedule with the client's needs and the desire of each police officer to put in a certain number of hours for every single job that you have available.
Yeah. So, and again, we work for the municipality. So any customer, anybody who wants to hire an officer in that municipality's footprint is going to end up calling us. And then we follow the rules of that police department or sheriff's office to communicate the job, to divvy them up, to pay them, and so on. So it is highly customized. We're an extension of the department, and we work solely for that department. We're in partnership with them.
So have you ever run into a case where there's been a client or a potential client that the municipality has maybe not been too keen on working for?
Oh yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. Or even worse, we'll find ones that we'll reach out to the municipality and say, you sure you want to do this? Like, it's within your rules, but you may want to have a rule around this one, you know? So common rules are like liquor, right? Some departments will not work details where liquor is involved, or more commonly they'll work outside but not inside. So they won't have an officer inside of a bar, for example, but they might have one outside, you know, in a bar district or something like that. A lot of times there's rules around how many officers. So like we have one department where they will work liquor jobs, but it requires at least three officers, one supervising officer and two non-supervising. There's rules like that. No, you know, no department's going to work like an adult area or something that's, you know, clearly going to be in the worst visual interest of the department and make them look bad. So if we get a call that's in the gray area like that, we'll either say, sorry, we don't do this type of work, or we'll call the department. We have a liaison in every department and say, is this okay? If we had a call from a big hotel in one of our footprints and said they wanted officers on a Saturday night. And the account manager said, is there liquor in your lobby? And they said, well, there's a bar, but it's, you know, you have to go down the corridor to get to the bar and the officers would be in the lobby. So that's in a gray area. So we called the department and said, is that okay? But, you know, another one, a jewelry store chain called us for security in a jewelry store in one of our footprints, which would have been fine. It didn't violate any rules. But we asked, all right, what exactly do you want the officer to do? And they said, well, the first thing we want him to do is get the master key and then go in the back room and then count the Rolexes. And we're like, are you kidding? There's a lot of liability.
Oh, my word.
So we called our liaison and we got on the phone with the municipal lawyer, the head lawyer, and said, this is within your rules, you know, technically. But I think pretty clearly you can see that you shouldn't be doing this. And they updated their terms and conditions at that point, so it could never happen again. So we're kind of eyes and ears. You know, we won't make decisions. We won't on behalf of the municipality or the department say, no, we're not going to do that. But we'll raise a red flag with them if we see something that's seemingly in their worst interest.
You know, that's actually an excellent point, because I think even particularly the younger officers who maybe haven't been exposed to the 95% of the pop, you know, the calls that are, what is it? 5% of the population gives you 95% of your headaches. Yep. It's okay. So maybe they haven't been exposed to that significantly enough yet to truly distrust and question everything. And they might just be willing to say, yeah, I'm happy to come in and help your business out with this or that, but then not recognize they're exposing themselves and the department to liability.
Yeah. We had a case where an officer called the account team and said, hey, last night at that detail I worked, I was asked to sign a form. Do you get that form? So we were, you know, what? So the account manager called the clients and sent us the form. And after some back and forth, they did. And when I read it, I realized this was a form that once the officer signs it, it pushes all risk onto the officer, like one way indemnification. And it was completely unethical. So I called our liaison. I got on the phone with the lawyer and I said, you know, we got a problem. Like, anybody who signed this form shouldn't be working at this place. And the lawyer agreed. And then we went back to the vendor and said, don't ever try that again. Or, you know, the next officer you see will not be working at detail. So, you're right. I mean, a lot of times people think nothing of signing terms and conditions and things like that. But in this world, you really have to be careful about it. So we try to be, you know, kind of a protector of the officers when they're working these details.
Wow. That in and of itself is an excellent reason for municipalities to consider bringing your organization in, because I don't think people realize how many times police officers are sort of propositioned for their skill set. And and that can be kind of a dangerous thing for themselves, for their families, for their cities, for their departments. I mean, there are just so many factors that come into play that they don't have anyone but their union rep kind of looking out for them. And you don't call him every single time you get an offer to take on a job.
And it's not just the liability. It's how the department looks in the to the public, right? So we I'll give you another example, right? So we had an officer who worked a detail at a grocery store chain and said to us in passing, said to the account manager, oh yeah, they asked me to go out and get the carts, the shopping carts from the parking lot, right? So the account manager in our weekly meeting, we have a meeting of like concerns, right? Said, mentioned this, and we were all like aghast. Like, can you, everybody walks around with a movie camera now, right? So can you imagine being in this town and taking out your iPhone and shooting a movie of a uniformed officer collecting shopping carts in the parking lot of a grocery store and throwing that on YouTube, right? So it's, you know, of course we called our liaison and said, look, technically this is not against the rules, but I really don't think, you know, I think we should call the grocery store and say, don't ever do that again, which is exactly what we did.
Wow. Yeah, I can't imagine that I would really like that. In fact, I think the impression that that would give me as a civilian is like, is he working? Is he helping
Am I paying
somebody? Like, what? Yeah. What is going on here? I would, I think we're a bunch of cynical civilians too. So we kind of tend to jump to the worst case assumption. We don't need to, but we kind of do. And that's not a pretty picture.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, we have a lot of departments where before we went in there, officers got paid in cash at the site of the detail. So picture that, right? So you're at a bar, you're at a nightclub. It's 2 a.m. And somebody that works at the nightclub is going up to an officer with a white envelope filled with non-sequential, unmarked tons of money.
No. That's terrible. I mean, that just brings up every mob movie I've ever seen in my life.
Off the top of my head, I could name 10 major cities in America where that happens on a weekly basis every weekend. And it's, you know, and we have a lot of, you know, departments where we talk to the chief after a year and a half, how things going, and they think back and they think, I can't believe we were doing that. I just can't believe we got away with that. And, you know, we should have never done that.
Yeah, so. But you do what you know. You know, that's the reality is the departments right now, there are so many changes happening culturally in the law enforcement community right now. And I think that a lot of it has to do with education and awareness. The more we educate them and the more we bring these kinds of things to light, then the more aware they are about the dangers of what has always been done. And there's nothing wrong with changing that rule of thumb. So it kind of, it works perfectly for you because you have this company now that can step in and help them, you know, protect themselves and organize things and save money and build a stronger reputation and have somebody looking out for the perception of the community of their officers, which to me, it's like a win. How do you lose?
Yeah, and the programs themselves are good things. We're sitting here knocking them and saying all these bad examples like cash on site and stuff. But at the end of the day, the extra duty is a good thing for the officers, for the department, and for the community, right? So the officers, look, these aren't the highest paid people in the world, especially given what they do. So it does give them an opportunity to, you know, pay for daycare or elder care or whatever they're trying to save for. So it's a good thing, right? And for the community, you get a lot more police for your buck, right? For the same taxpayer dollars, you're getting more police out there, right? So if something does go wrong, and this happens all the time on a weekly basis, we'll have an officer call us and say, I was working a detail and I got called by dispatch to leave that post and go because there was an armed robbery in progress across the street. Now, if the officer hadn't been working that detail, it would have taken 8 minutes to get an officer there, right? So there is that benefit for the community and for the department. It's a way of interacting with the community in a good way, right? So when you have an officer at a church on Sunday morning, the officer saying hi to people, it's a good thing for the department, right? Because otherwise, the only time you see an officer is when you're going 85 and a 65 or something like that, right? Yeah. So there's very positive things all the way around for these programs. The issue is they tend not to be managed in a good way because there's a side thing for the department. And that's where the bad thing grows, right? So that's we try to knock that out, but keep all the benefits of it.
You know, another thing that comes to mind about the value of something like this has to do with the exhaustion rate of our officers, because they tend to value the money that they can make in a second job so much that they'll take as many hours as they can get, which puts them into a dangerous position exhaustion-wise, so that when they're on shift, they're not at their best. So this kind of helps to manage that, the amount of hours that they're putting in a week's time.
Exactly. And a lot of departments will have rules around that, but we're able to enforce those rules. So if a department says, look, you can't work more than 12 hours a day of extra duty, and you try to sign up for 2 8-hour extra duty shifts, when you try to sign up for the second one on your app or in your portal on the computer, it's going to say you can't take it because you're already working 8 hours, and this will take you to 16. We also have our own, like I said, we own a software company, so we have very sophisticated on-duty scheduling software which integrates with our service. So some departments will have rules like you can't work more than 70 hours a week on duty plus extra duty. So if they're using our on-duty scheduling service as well, we can police that and make sure that people aren't getting fatigued. And even more so than that, I mean, that's kind of a nuts and bolts way of managing this, but we sometimes will get calls, not sometimes, like on a weekly basis, we'll get calls from banks that will be verifying income for an officer because he's, applying for a loan for a house and needs to count every little drop of income that he has, including the extra duty. And look, at the end of the day, the extra duty stuff can go away. There could be no more bridge project, or the movie theater says we're not going to hire officers anymore. So in those cases, we always call the officer and basically say, really? I mean, you're really getting a loan that requires the extra duty income? That should be considered gravy, or that. If it goes away tomorrow, it shouldn't hurt you. You don't want your mortgage depending on something like that. So we try to, help out in those ways.
Well, that's actually a really practical, I mean, a really practical value that you bring to the table. I think that's kind of like a side value. Maybe you weren't thinking of that when you started the company, like, oh, being able to help them budget themselves a little bit better. But
There's a whole mess of things we weren't thinking about when we started the company.
it's
Yeah, that's one of them. We
right.
didn't think the officers would be collecting shopping carts and parking lots either, but yeah, we saw
Oh my
that
goodness, that's hilarious.
too.
So it sounds like this is a pretty cool idea. It's something that has, I mean, it's grown relatively fast. I mean, you said what, 2015? It's what, 4 years, not
Our
even, yeah, 4 years
first law
later.
enforcement client was January of 16, so 16, 17. It's 4 years, and in 19 we were responsible for $50 million of extra duty. So yeah, I think it's becoming, one of our chiefs that we've been working with for a few years said to me about a year ago, he goes, what you guys do right now is kind of weird and unusual, and it's hard to explain, and it's kind of scary for some departments. He goes, but 3 years from now it's going to be normal. And I do think, that a lot of departments say to us after they've been working with us for a while, they say, this is so much better. Like, I can't believe how painful it was for us. We never really thought about it. We just kind of thought it was a necessary pain that we had to go through. So, no, I agree. I think it's, as an industry, it's going to become a normal thing.
So, remind me again the name of your company.
We are Extra Duty Solutions, and we can be found online at extradutysolutions.com.
Okay. So, y'all who are out there listening, thinking, wow, I never really thought that this was something that I might consider that our department needs. But after listening to us talk about it for 40 minutes or so, you realize there are a lot of really cool resources involved in this one simple products or service product. Both, I guess, because you have an algorithm and software, so that makes it both.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's we describe it as humans using technology as opposed to just a software firm or a technology firm. Whereas we have a lot of people doing it too, so
Humans using technology
yeah.
and technology human using human skills to serve humans. I mean, it's just crazy the interaction between the two. But yeah, I would definitely recommend that you guys check this guy out. I mean, like I said, when he got on the show, I hadn't really known him. I gotta tell you guys, like I've interviewed a lot of people, I've chatted with a lot of people, I've scheduled interviews. I was a military journalist. I even got to interview a president one time. And this is the first guy I've ever connected with who I had to go through two layers of security to get to. Like, I'm not even playing. I am not playing around. I got notified by one guy, and then I thought I was talking to Rich, and it wasn't Rich. It was somebody else not rich. And then I finally got to rich. And it's like, wow, man, this guy's important.
I'm glad there's that perception out there.
I just had a chuckle because I thought, golly gee, when I interviewed the president, it was so much easier. Dang. Of course, I was in the military then, and I don't know, maybe that got me some, I don't know, a few things. It was just funny. I thought of that this morning. I'm thinking, wow. I wonder if he's like a king or a prince or something. I don't know.
The great and powerful Oz. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So I definitely recommend that you guys check this guy out. And if you have any questions, just like always, send me an email, renee@thecommandpost.org. I'm happy to pass the questions on to Rich, although I don't think that that's necessary, that I'm his pass-through. I think it would be awesome if you could just email him directly or email his company directly, info@, is that what it is, Rich?
info@extradutysolutions.com.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you want just more information, just go to the site. There's a plenty of information there. There's a 3-minute video that explains a high level what we do. There's our general presentation you can download, and that's extradutysolutions.com.
Okay. Well, that's simple. Everything he does is quite streamlined. I think you guys make go out of your way to make things as easy as possible for the end user, and that makes sense to me.
Well, I appreciate it. We do try to make it easy, that's for sure.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been really interesting having this chat. It's a cool service. It's something that I never really thought about. I mean, sometimes like the law enforcement world has so many details and so many aspects to it that as a civilian, you're just not kind of aware of all the nuts and bolts of how they live, you know, what their existence is really like. And this shed light for me on the whole idea of what it looks like to be involved in a second or third job.
Yeah, and a lot of people are totally unaware that there is these things called, like, you can actually hire an officer to provide security or traffic service or whatever you need. And most agencies do have these programs. What we just try to make it easier for everybody.
Well, I like the notion. I hope you guys keep, it sounds to me like you're going to be around for a lot of years to come. So hopefully you'll come back and tell us more stories about the weirder things that you've run into. Because that's the stuff that I dig. Like, I totally want to hear those funny stories. They crack me up.
Yeah, I'm sure I've got plenty of them. Believe me.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show today. We're going to wrap this up for this episode. Next week, we will be joined by yet another incredible resource asset and researcher in the world of law enforcement. So make sure you tune in next Saturday when we drop our next episode. Until then, take care of each other. Watch each other's backs out there. We need you around. We need your service, and we appreciate every one of you. So I'm signing off.